1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. Forecasters confirm a tornado touchdown in Southern California in Carpinteria yesterday. National Weather Service says it was an EF0 that sent debris flying everywhere. Two school administrators recovering after a shooting at East High School in Denver, where Police Chief Ron Thomas says 17-year-old getting a pat down opened fire.
My understanding is that the weapon has not been recovered, but again, we do know who the individual is. We do know where they live, but we are familiar with associates of this individual, and so we do believe we will be successful in finding that individual and that weapon very soon.
An appeals court rejecting an effort by former President Trump's attorneys to block Trump lawyer Evan Corcoran from having to testify to special counsel investigating handling of classified records. At the White House,
history tells us again and again, when women are safe and free and treated like equal human beings, the whole world's better off.
President Biden hosting a Women's History Month event. This is ABC News. Moderna's chief operating officer appears before lawmakers who question the drug maker's plan to raise vaccine prices.
Moderna CEO Stefan Bancel faced a Senate committee chaired by Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who pressed the executive on the company's decision to quadruple the cost of the COVID-19 vaccine ahead of it reaching the commercial market. Sanders accused Moderna of having an unprecedented level of corporate greed, pointing to how it only cost around $3 to manufacture the life-saving vaccine, but that the company would charge $130. Moderna would be billing Medicare and other insurance plans billions of dollars. During testimony, Bancel avoided answering Sanders directly when asked whether he would reconsider the cost hike. M. Nguyen, ABC News, Washington.
Prince William made a surprise visit to Poland to underscore Britain's support for the nation's ally amid Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The International Ice Hockey Federation barring Russia and Belarus from all its world championships next season. Andy Field, ABC News.
The Cripescast with me, Charlie Barron, Saturdays and Sundays at noon on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
All right, who's ready to eat? We got brats for dinner, marshmallows for dessert.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. The third-generation owners of Union Star Cheese Factory near Fremont were found dead of gunshot wounds on Saturday. Police arrested the 25-year-old son of David and Jan Metzik, Eric, later that day. Investigators found a journal in Eric's room at his parents' home where he talked about eliminating them. Metzik now facing two counts of first-degree intentional homicide, cash bond set at $1 million. Metzik has a hearing coming up March 30th. He is facing life in prison. Two bills that will dramatically increase penalties for reckless driving go up for a vote in both houses of the Wisconsin legislature today. The GOP-backed measures include doubling fines and forfeiture ranges for reckless driving and subsequent offenses. The second bill allows police to impound a repeat reckless driver's vehicle. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Dear hero, whoever you are, you save lives. I live with sickle cell and the pain and the issues that come along with sickle cell every day. I've had lots and lots of blood transfusions over my lifetime, probably in the hundreds. Blood helps me to be able to live.
My final tour was in Afghanistan in 2008. I was hit June 3rd. The next thing I remember, I woke up in Germany. Doctor came in and said, we're going to amputate your leg. I had to get a lot of blood transfusion to stay alive.
Because of you, I'm allowed to see my son grow up.
Because of you, I got a second chance at life.
Giving equals living. Give blood. Replenish the supply. Make an appointment to give today by visiting hhs.gov/giveblood. This message is brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole.
If you are 45 and older, don't let stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. And now a speech.
I just want to say that friendship is about heart. Heart and brain. Who's with me?
Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
And my brain is saying, when it's time to go home, somebody call me a ride.
Love that guy.
Me too.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Join us daily at therickssmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is The Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. I want to start off today with a piece by our friend Tim Noah over at the New Republic. And look, I think this is a must-read article by Tim over there titled GOP's Idea of Youth, Little League, Proms, Try Working in a Slaughterhouse and Marrying at 10. This a must-read. And I've been saying this for a while. This is the wheelhouse where Democrats need to put their messaging. Because while all of the insanity that we're seeing around Trump and while all of the insanity we're seeing out of Jim Jordan and the rest of the freedom to the kook caucus, while the clown show goes on, bad things are happening all across this country. All of the distractions that we're seeing from the circus is taking away the fact that in state houses across this country, they're doing really horrible things around child labor laws, around kids getting married. They're literally getting rid of, I thought, the party of family values, the party that loves the children, all of the cute kooks who are concerned about some pedophile ring that they can't find in a pizza shop basement where there's no basement. You would think that they would be all in favor of saying, no, we need to protect the children. Oh, no. Look at state houses across this country and the legislation that they're moving. Because, hey, why not? Send those teenage kids onto the kill floor. Clean those blades on the slaughterhouse floor. Absolutely. And again, as Tim points out in his piece, accurately so, in 2016, the last time the Republican Party had a platform, he points out that they mentioned children 35 times. But when you take out the references to zygotes, embryos, and fetuses, just 3 times. And usually in the context of, it's all about parental rights. So it's back to beating the kids and, good traditional family values. So I found it interesting that he went through and he said, look what they're doing. Look what Republicans are doing around child labor. Gutting laws across this country. You look at what Iowa put forth, which is just mind-blowing. The part that's most mind-blowing to me, and I know how Republicans love immunity and immunity shields for corporations. I know. But the fact that they would come up with a piece of, someone would write this, that as long as a corporation, like a slaughterhouse, for instance, was working with the local school district and a kid got hurt in the employ of the company, they wrote this, the company would not be liable. And you go, really? Now, look, I've said before, I'm a big fan of kids learning to be productive workers, to showing up on time, value, you know, all that stuff. Did it myself. 8 years old, my first paper route. Not by nine, I had two paper routes. I cut grass. I shoveled snow. I did odd jobs. Did all kinds of stuff. I think that's good. But when you're talking about putting kids into jobs that are competing against their parents, I have a real problem with that. And it seems, again, you know, they want to make America great again. And this, you ask, when were we last great? A lot of people go back to the trifold hat era. You know, when kids did marry at 10, 11, 12, 13. It seems there are groups here on the other side pushing for this kind of stuff. Now, what's interesting to me is he points out that EPI, the Economic Policy Institute, has reported that since 2015, child labor violations in this country have quadrupled. Because we need cheap labor. You know, we're going to start bringing back manufacturing, so we need cheap labor. And who better to fill that cheap labor than desperate, gullible, not-know-any-better kind of kids? And as we loosen these restrictions, do you think it gets better or worse? Do you think corporate America goes, no, we're going to take this responsibility, we're going to take this to heart, and we're going to do what's right? Or do you go, hey, do you think they're going to go, hey, there's a good way to make an extra buck? I'm betting on the extra buck. And look, if you can get those kids married off early, maybe get them to pump out a couple of their own kids, get them desperate on the treadmill, make them showing up to those crummy jobs, even better still. I was shocked to find out that child marriage is legal in 43 states in this country. And that's seven states in this country, there's no minimum age at all. And I know it's parental consent. I don't know. I don't know that I want 10-year-olds marrying. Sorry. Just like I don't want 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds working on the kill floor. So I had to throw this out there because this is, it's a must read. You got to go check out Tim Noah's piece. It's just, but this is where we are. Understand all of the stuff that we're going to be seeing over the next months, all of the train wreck, all of the Trump coming in and sucking all the oxygen out of the air and all of the attention, all of the media running to him so the clickbaiters can go and get their tizzy on. Bad things like this are going to continue to happen. And it's going to harm families, working families. You know, it's not going to harm the Trumps. It's not going to harm our upper crust. It's going to be working class families. It's going to be working kids. And as we destroy educational opportunities, it's going to get even worse. And that's what they want. Look at the fact today came out. The Fed has hiked interest rates another 0.25%. Knowing, yeah, we caused that banking thing. Yeah, we had a bit. Granted, you know, the bank, you know, they were gambling, they were rolling the dice. But we had a big part of it, and they're going to continue down the road. And this is one of those things where I keep going, you know, when do we wake up? When do we stop? When do we stop allowing the Fed to use this tool of interest rate hikes as a way to curb inflation? Because this is the tool. The tool the Fed has is raise interest rates. So if you want to slow a heated economy down, you raise interest rates. So things cost more. People lose more jobs, higher unemployment rates. And with that comes, you know, people losing homes. With that comes people losing jobs. With that, you know, go down the list of all of the horrible things that happen with a job loss. And look, they've stated it. They want jobs lost. But also it suppresses wages for everyone. So, you know, you're holding down wages. You're causing higher unemployment, causing more pain for who? The working people of this country. The wealthy, they're fine. They're going to be fine. Just fine. And I've been saying for a very long time, when do we stop this? Because why do we use interest rates as a way to stop inflation? Well, you know, I know. Rick, it's the tool that they have. You know, it's the one tool that the Federal Reserve has, you know, to slam on the brakes with both feet and cause pain and misery. The other thing is they can. And like I said, I've argued forever that raising taxes, especially on the very well-to-do in the upper crust, would be a better way to fight inflation. Be a much better way. But here's the thing. The reality is everyone knows DC's broken. And it's broken by design. Because our capitalists know, our captains of industry, the titans on Wall Street, they know that Washington doesn't want to make any decisions. So our wealth class, they're willing to be the rulers of the world. And they're going to use the tools at their disposal to screw workers and then blame that government that's not working right. And that tool, slam on the brakes, cause you pain and misery, so you turn around and go, that government screwed me over. Because understand, the Fed is run by bankers. Wall Street. And it's crazy how we use, like I said, it's crazy how we use the Fed to slow things down. Cause a problem, have a bailout, rinse and repeat. And it's just, when do we stop? When do we wake up from this? And I know we've been trained like Pavlovian dogs to anytime we hear tax increases that we foam at the mouth and get all hot and bothered under the collar without actually going, well, Rick, you're talking about raising taxes. Who are you talking about it on? Well, the very wealthy. Oh, that's all you ever talk about. Yes, because they have been getting all of the money. They've been getting all of the resources. And I know. They're the ones who create all the jobs. And you go, no, they don't create the jobs. Demand creates jobs. That's the reality. When workers have money in their pocket and have a demand for something, someone will fill that. Does it have to be corporate America? Does it have to be a multinational corporation? Does it have to be the rich guy that we've gave all these tax breaks to? No, of course not. I remember sitting through hours of lectures about how the wonders of the free market were going to save us from all the ills of the world. That this invisible hand was going to do all these wonderful things. Here's an interesting story. And I love this. The Hill today had a beauty. Housing prices have been going up. Rents through the roof. The pandemic had a big part of this. I would argue a huge part of this is Wall Street buying up as many rentals as they can get. I mean, I'm sure we've all seen these people on TikTok and Instagram saying, oh, you go buy, you know, 15 rentals, you go buy 20 rentals, and you know, and there's a whole calculus. And you got these rich investors going out and buying up. I get calls all the time. Hey, do you want to sell your daughter's house? No. Do you want to sell your house? No. And it's not Bob, the guy down the street who's flipping houses. No, these are industrial investors. These are big money investors who are taking over all the rental properties. So when I saw the story over at the Hill today, headline, yes, it is remote workers who spiked housing rent costs, according to a study. There's a study. There's a study done, evidently, according to the St. Louis Federal Reserve. It's all of those people who work in you know, in Silicon Valley, all those Google people, all those Facebook people, all those people who work on computers, who then moved all across the country. They moved all across the country, and they spiked the value of people's homes. In fact, you know, median sales price for a house in this country in the fourth quarter of 2022 was $467,700, according to the St. Louis Fed. And it's these handful of people who were working in Silicon Valley making these huge salaries. They were going to Atlanta, evidently, and just spiked them right through the roof because they could work from home. And you go, really? Is it that outrageous? And because here's the thing. This is where my mind goes. I go, look in my backyard. How many people do I know who are working from somewhere in Silicon Valley? How many people here? Because the rents went crazy in my neighborhood. Outrageous rents. What caused it here? Well, what caused it here, and I truly believe, one, you had people buying up huge amounts of properties, but two, good old-fashioned good old-fashioned American greed. Because we can. Everybody else is doing it. We're going to do it. And nowhere in this report did I find that. I found, and you know, it's these rich millennials who are going out and living in exotic places and raising the rents because they got all this income. And I'm going, really? Does anybody buy this? I mean, it's convenient, I guess. I'm going to blame it on COVID and people staying home. But I thought all the people who were staying home were lazy and weren't working. But thank you, Hill, for a great laugh today. I really appreciate this story. I want to hear your thought. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Thank you also to the National Bureau of Economic Research. Wow. It's all because of you people who work from home. Yeah. rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I gotta tell you, I'm really enjoying the Republican messaging machine over President Biden's first veto. As you know, he vetoed this piece of legislation that would have mandated investment firms to not take into account environmental, social governance, or good governance by corporations into account when they're doing investing. And it's, again, they're running around saying, ESG's dangerous, it kills businesses. It's wrecking our economy, this ESG. And look, the right does a masterful job. It's ESG, it's CTE. They've got all of these letters. It's an alphabet soup of fear. And, you know, I saw these messages coming out from all of the usual suspects on the right. And my mind went into this place of going, you remember the good old days when Republicans believed that markets solved all of our problems? That the wonders of the free market, the invisible hand did all these, and how the invisible hand should never be handcuffed or infringed upon by those evil politicians. Remember that? Yeah, I know. I know it was BS then too, but you know, at least they were smart enough not to say the dumb stuff out loud. This is kind of that, because my mind goes, you're telling the investment firms that I use that I can't have them look at these things? Explain how this works. I know that in certain things, Republicans say they don't want anyone between them and their doctors, except for, you know, anything having to do with women or reproduction, or, you know, go down the list. I would think this would be absolutely sacrosanct. I don't want that evil government between me and my banker, and me and my investment man, or woman. And the thing that gets me is, I think this is smart. If you do want to change policy, especially in a world where DC is broken, where we can't seem to solve big problems, we can't seem to figure out how to address what's down the road, that we the people, direct action, you, me, us, using our dollars. You know, using what Republicans have been telling us for years is the answer. The free market. Marching with our feet or our investments. This is one of those things where I go, you know, I'm sorry, but I should be able to invest in a company that is socially conscious, that isn't going to get themselves into trouble for who knows. Name the bit of craziness. Name the CEO who's doing who knows what. Name the management structure that's, oh, I don't know, getting people sick with COVID and taking bets on it. Because I gotta imagine that's gonna do something to your stock price, right? That kind of stuff gets into the media, your stock price falls. I'm gonna lose money. Seems like I would want them to know that, to shield me from the liability and the repercussions. But evidently Republicans don't believe that because, well, they're bought and paid for by big oil. Because that's what this is really about. They don't care about people. They care about who's lobbying them, who's putting money in their pockets. And I think the only way we as a country change things is by us being active directly, which is why yesterday you saw across the country in about 100 cities in 29 states, you saw groups gathering in front of four big banks, the J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citibank, and Wells Fargo, protesting a bunch of old people, a bunch of people in their 60s and older, in rocking chairs, sitting in front of the bank, protesting, you know, the banks investing in, you know, the fossil fuel industry. And again, this is direct action. This is people using their feet and their dollars to make corporate America do what's in the interest of not just them, but the country. Since D.C. is not going to do anything. But according to this report released by the Rainforest Action Network, they point out that, you know, the amount of money that these big banks have spent on the fossil fuel industry is outrageous. Hundreds of billions of dollars that they've invested in this industry. And look, I get it. They're in the business of making money. But this is one of those moments where you go, okay, well, people are paying attention. And the flip side of this, and this is the good part, this kind of activism moves people in a direction. These banks immediately came out with, we do the investing to the fossil fuel industry, but you know, we're over the next decade we're going to spend more than $1 trillion on renewable energy. So hey, you know, and that's great news because, well, it looks like activism is working. It looks like mobilizing, engaging, and protesting actually is kind of working. But the fact that J.P. Morgan Chase, the largest financer of fossil fuels from 2016 to 2021, $382 billion. Citibank was second with $285 billion. Citibank, they're committed to $1 trillion by the end of the decade in sustainable energy. That's, if you'd have told me that a decade ago, I would have told you were crazy. Activism is working. Political activism is also working because a lot of this has to do with the fact that the Biden administration is moving us in that direction. That the Inflation Reduction Act has got some things in there to help with climate change. And this kind of investment is moving people in that direction. That's a smart thing. Another smart thing. Reshoring manufacturing. The Treasury Department just came out and with their tax credits that they're going to be giving to chip manufacturers. About $24 billion over the next couple of years in tax credits for people who are going to make chips here. With very specific language on, if you've got anything to do with North Korea, anything to do with China, Russia, India, or Iran, you get nothing. This is huge because this is going to help reshore our manufacturing. It's going to help us bring jobs back to this country, and from a national security standpoint, going to give us the ability to make stuff again. That's freaking huge. It's transformational. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1972. That was the day the Equal Rights Amendment passed the U.S. Senate and moved to the states for ratification. It had passed the House the previous fall. Alice Paul and Crystal Eastman of the National Women's Party first wrote the ERA in the 1920s. It was introduced to Congress in 1923. The revised version that Congress passed in 1971 and 1972 stated simply, equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex. The amendment needed 38 states to ratify by March of 1979 in order to pass. 35 states ratified the amendment, but 5 states later rescinded ratification. The 38-state requirement was never met. The decades-long debate among women's rights advocates often centered on formal equality versus protective legislation for women workers. But an amendment establishing equality meant the end to restrictive discriminatory laws. These included laws imposing restriction on a woman's right to buy or sell property or to conduct a business, the age at which women could marry, differing admission standards for boys and girls in tax-supported educational institutions, laws establishing different jail sentences by sex for identical crimes, regulations denying unemployment compensation payments to pregnant women who are still able and willing to work, and much more. The far right and religious fundamentalists of all faiths fiercely opposed the ERA, fearing it would erode traditional gender roles. Many progressives and the labor movement also opposed it for many years on the basis that hard-won protective legislation would be lost. It is striking that, as of 2017, there is still no clear legal codification of women's equal status to men.
Exciting news, people. Utopia is on the rise. Space Commander Elon Musk has announced that His Magnificence, i.e. him, intends to construct his very own private town on 3,500 acres of farmland near his new Tesla plant southeast of Austin, Texas. More than a town, Musk explains that he will create utopia in Texas, promising an ecological paradise where his Tesla workers can live and do fun things like swimming, pickleball, and paying rent to him. The gabillionaire is certainly rich enough to erect his own Muskopolis, but alas, the Utopia name is already taken. Indeed, I've been to Utopia, Texas, a small town west of San Antonio that was founded in 1855 by, cover your ears, Elon, Swiss socialists. Of course, history shows that a company town is ruled by the company, not by residents, much less socialists. And Musk has made clear at Tesla, Twitter, etc., that his personal whims rule over workers, consumers, our environment, and even truth. Which brings us to that ecological workers' paradise he's promising. Even as one arm of his empire was extolling his vision of a Garden of Eden situated along the beauty of the Colorado River, another arm was scheming to pollute it. Musk is asking Texas corporate control regulators to let him use the site to dump 140,000 gallons a day of his industrial wastewater into the Colorado. Excuse me, but that turns Elon's ecological paradise into a fraud. Worse, it adds up to Musk pouring 50 million gallons a year of his waste into the river, fouling the main water source for dozens of towns and hundreds of farms downstream. This is Jim Hightower saying, Musk wants to extend the long sordid history in our country of company town hucksters, and his latest Texas scam is proof that we should never trust a billionaire promising us paradise.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So every day, something new coming out of the Trump world. And now this stuff with the lawyers has got me all over the place because it seems really unusual to where the lawyers are now the center of the story. Because I was just reading this Washington Post article that said, you know, there's a federal appeals court that says that a lawyer for Trump evidently has to turn over all of their notes, transcripts, and other evidence to the prosecutors. That's unusual to me because I thought discovery went the other way, that the prosecutor had to turn everything over. I know, watching too much Law and Order on TV, but it just seems a little backward, which is why I've asked my good friend Chris Hahn to come share some thoughts. He's an attorney, also a syndicated radio host and host of the Aggressive Progressive podcast. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Anytime, man, anytime.
So this seems, I don't know, this seems unusual. Normally I go, yeah, the prosecutor has to turn everything over. I saw that on TV. It's rare that I've never seen the defendant have to turn over the lawyer's notes to the prosecutor.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously we've all heard of attorney-client privilege, and it is very rare and very difficult to break that privilege unless somebody allows that to happen. And in this case, the privilege is being broken because the privilege does not apply when the attorney is involved in the furtherance of a criminal or fraudulent activity, and that's this crime fraud exception that's happening right here. And the DOJ, the special prosecutor in this case, has convinced a judge that the attorney in question here was furthering a crime when he prepared a fraudulent, it appears, and again, I'm not fully sure what this is, what exactly, I haven't read all the briefings here yet, but it appears that this is in relation to the document that was signed by another attorney, and I'm forgetting her name, a younger attorney. It was prepared by this attorney that is whose notes are being turned over.
Yeah, how unusual is that?
It's not unusual for two attorneys to work on a document and one to sign it. Usually, though, they're part of the same law firm. You know, maybe a junior associate works on something and a senior associate would sign it. In this case, it appears that this attorney didn't want to sign it and handed it over to the other attorney. And by the way, that might be, you know, to be honest with you, I don't know this for sure. I'm speculating here. That might be why it is known to the DOJ that this man, you know, was involved with creating a false document. He might have discovered it was a false document, didn't want to sign the document, and then Trump gave it to this other attorney and she signed it. Oh, you must be, you know, you're under the spell of Donald Trump. Oh, you must be honest, you're Donald Trump. We're Trumpies, right? So we're going to sign this document. It's very strange what's going on. It's not unprecedented, but it's just like every minute of every day, there is another criminal charge, accusation against this man. And honestly, we haven't even gotten to the worst of it. This thing in New York is the least of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, the documents
are not that much higher up the scale for me. They're bad, but not horrible. Unless he was planning on selling them to Russia, which is possible, I don't know, or somebody else. But the January 6th stuff is what I want to see him answer for. And I want to see everybody involved with it answer for it, particularly the people who planned it.
And the funding.
And him. You know, it's like, the foot soldiers are all going to jail, right? The people who were lied to and, you know, probably have some mental health issues in a lot of these cases. You know, that guy who dressed up like a Viking. I mean, it was, you know, come on. You think he was playing with a full deck? I don't think so. And yet he was lied to and he was conned. And now he's in jail for 3.5 years asking for vegan meals, you know, because he's woke. And it's, you know, where's, you know, why isn't Steve Bannon? Why isn't Rudy Giuliani? Why isn't Donald Trump being held to account for this? And again, I've said this to you before. I don't think he's going to spend a single minute in jail.
And I agree with
you.
Not
a single minute.
Nope.
But I do want him banned from ever seeking public office again, or receiving government contracts again, or doing holding any position of the public trust again. That I want.
See, I think the only way we move forward as a country is that he stands for election and he gets beat, and beats soundly. I mean, I see him. If this happens and he doesn't get to run again because of some, you know, one of these trials, I just see things going much crazier down the road. And you think, you know, the whining and complaining about 2020 is going to be bad. Just wait.
I think you're going to start to see, you know, look, as details get put out, I think you're going to start to see people cracking from their support of Trump. I think we're already seeing some of that. again, I don't know who's going to die on a wall for a guy's right to cover up payments to his porn star lover. I just, there were no significant protests around this, which I think is telling.
Yeah, there were you know, there were no marches in my neighborhood either.
No, nobody was marching. Nobody cared. You know, a couple of idiots showed up. There were more reporters and cops around than protesters. And by the way, you're not going to get away with that in New York City. New York City isn't, you know, even D.C. Like New York City, I've been to many like ticker tape parades in New York City. I'm a Yankee fan. I've been to the Giant ticker tape parade. I've been to the Women's World Cup ticker tape parade. New York City police do not mess around with large crowds. I've been to Times Square on New Year's Eve. There, you know, where there's a million people showing up. I've done the New York City Marathon. These guys know what they're doing, and there's like 40,000 of them. You know, it's the fifth largest army in the world, the New York City Police Department. So I'd like to see them try to enact a protest similar to what happened on January 6th in New York, you know, in D.C., in New York City. It would be quickly put down. But that's not going to happen because they don't have any opportunity to do that. And quite frankly, nobody's going to die on the cross for this guy's ability to cover up his payments to his porn star ex-lover.
Yeah.
And by the way, I feel bad calling her a lover. She was not his lover. But I don't know. I'm just trying to be polite.
Again, this is one of those things I don't even care a little bit about. And I know the campaign finance stuff. For me, this is sex stuff should be off the table.
I don't care anything. I don't care about it at all, except for one guy did get sentenced to 3 years in jail for this exact same issue on this exact same matter. And why should that guy go to jail? And this guy, and Donald Trump could have pardoned him. It was a federal crime. The state courts are trying to do this through some novel connection between the state and federal law. I don't know. I buy that, but I do think they're trying to hold him accountable. Okay. I'm a little concerned that their grand jury is not voting. Maybe they lost them. Tip O'Neill said a grand jury Daniel Patrick Moynihan said that a grand jury would indict a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
Right. So, Donald Trump kind of looks like a ham. So, not trying to be mean or shame him, but come on, look at him. He looks a little leggy.
I'm not getting in the middle of any of that. So, you're listening to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Chris Hansen.
Well, I mean, he could call the other guy a meatball. DeSantis a meatball. We can't call him a ham.
You can call him whatever you want.
Okay.
Check out his website, ChristopherHahn.com. So in looking at this again, we both agree that the thing in New York, I don't think is the end all be all. I know people are going, oh, we're going to get him. No, I don't think it's enough for that. For me, Georgia is a huge thing. For me, January 6th is the huge thing. The documents, while I have a problem with it, I don't think that's as big of a deal, even though, we had Renato Mariani on, who said that would be the case that he would have taken as a federal prosecutor because, it's probably a lot easier to prove.
Well, I also want to know what his intentions were with those documents, right? I mean,
yeah,
I could see, anybody could just misview. First of all, we classify too much stuff in this country to begin with, right? Right. It's ridiculous how much we classify. But there are some things there that were compartmentalized and security clearances way above anything I've ever known.
Yeah, but none of that matters to me, Chris. None of that matters to me.
But what was he going
to
do
to me is that he was asked for it back repeatedly.
Right.
Repeatedly, they said,
nicely.
Give it back. We want
mostly
our stuff
nicely.
Back.
Can we get it back, please, Mr. Former President? Yes, come get it on Tuesday. Okay, they come on Tuesday. Oh, no, nobody's here. He can't get in today. Can you come back next week? I mean, that went on for a year and a half before they issued this. There was a subpoena issued. Then his lawyers said, and that's the whole point of what we first started talking about. They write a letter telling us that no, he gave everything back. And that was a clearly misleading, if not fraudulent, document. And look, what was your intention? Did Donald Trump intend to give those documents to a foreign country with the intent to hurt the United States of America or its interests? If he did do that, that's treason.
Yeah.
And the Constitution has a very specific remedy for treason. It's the only remedy prescribed in the Constitution for a criminal crime.
See, now, so, I don't go that far. I think Trump simply had it because he's an egomaniac. Look at what I've got. For me, it was a show off thing.
I think
that's a big part of it.
You're probably right, but it is interesting that, you know, the DOJ, which is pretty conservative on these things, is taking the step to utilize the crime fraud exception to call Trump's own attorney as a witness.
Yeah, that's huge.
You know, so there is some intention there that we may not be aware of.
Yeah, again, you know, real quick on this. So if you rate this on does he get convicted on anything, what do you think it is?
Oh, I think he could get convicted on all of them. But I don't think he's spending a minute in jail for any of them.
Do you agree with Tucker Carlson that Joe Biden should step in and end this right now?
No. But I don't think that means he won't at some point. You know, and maybe for the good of the country and for peace and for everything else, you do that. But of course, Donald Trump would have to accept that pardon.
That's true.
And accepting a pardon
means elocution.
It's an acceptance of guilt.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But here's the thing.
I don't know that he will.
You know, I have a bunch of people email me and go, why is this so important to you? And, this moment, you look back to, I don't know if you saw the story at the New York Times, this Ben Barnes, the former lieutenant governor of Texas, finally came out and said, 43 years ago, we did what everybody knew happened, back then. We told the Iranians, just keep those hostages a little bit longer. So that Carter loses. And, hey, never mind, going back to the Nixon years where he told the Vietnamese, just keep things going. Another 7 years, kill off some people. Not a big deal. We knew this stuff at the time. And those people got to walk and lead lives. I look at George W. Bush, all of the lies that we still don't get to know about 20 years ago that got us into Iraq. At some point, this stuff, you got to be held accountable.
Yeah, full disclosure, I know Ben Barnes somewhat. That is, think about being one of those hostages. You stayed in really nasty conditions for another 3 months for politics.
Yep.
And it's, unfortunately, there are far too many people whose lives are negatively impacted by politics, and most of them wear a uniform in this country. And it's sad and it's scary to see that happens. And we can only hope that less of that happens. I don't want to ever be in a country though where we're prosecuting each other just because we disagree.
No,
and I don't think that's what's happening here.
No, I think you prosecute people when they break the law.
And look, he broke the law, right? And we are, to quote John Adams, we are a nation of laws, not men. And no man, no matter what position they hold or held or want to hold, is above the law. And Donald Trump is no exception to that. And he got some time to think about it because there was this weird rule about not prosecuting a president. And okay, I could see why that might be an important rule to have. But he did do some criminal activities, it appears, and he is going to be tried for them. And people are going to just have to accept it. And this is just one. The one happening in New York is just one, and there are many more to come. Yeah. And quite frankly, Biden can't jump in and stop the prosecution in Georgia. He can't stop the prosecution in New York. The governor of Georgia might want to do that. But I'm telling you right now, the governor of New York will definitely not do that. New York might be the smallest of the fries, right? It's a class D or class E felony. At best, it's probably a misdemeanor. John Edwards, the former Democratic campaign presidential candidate, vice presidential candidate, he was prosecuted, or I think he pled out.
He pled out.
To a similar charge, almost the exact same charge, frankly. He used campaign funds to cover up an affair that resulted in a child.
Yeah, although I got to tell you, as much as I don't like Trump, Edwards was far worse. And I was an Edwards guy. I wanted to see. I was a supporter in 2004 and 2008.
I went up to. I was in New Hampshire in 2000 when he ran for president in 2000. Was it 2000 or 2004? He was Kerry's running mate in 2004, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I went up there. Maybe it was 2004. I went up there and I went to one of his rallies. while I was up in New Hampshire. I was working for Senator Schumer at the time. And man, that guy, he was the second coming of Bill Clinton. And it was a shame that, and he was exactly like Bill Clinton, it turns out, in a lot of ways. And it's a shame to me to see, you know, him throw that away. And but I don't think he was worse than Trump. I mean, this affair situation.
No, the affair situation was much worse.
Well, yeah, it was worse because there was a sick wife and a child that was resulting out of it. In this case, Donald Trump's wife was pregnant and he was courting the religious right in a campaign. So he paid some money. At least John Edwards wasn't telling people how to live their lives morally. Right. Wasn't courting people who wouldn't allow a woman's right to choose.
Yeah, I get your defense. I'm still sticking where I'm at.
I don't know. I think look, karma's a bitch and it comes for everybody. And I hope I didn't, you know, curse
you
in
did.
A way that you're not allowed to do it. I hope they got it. But
yeah.
Karma's a bee and it comes for us all. And it's coming for Donald Trump.
There you go.
You know, I'm happy.
Last thought, as a lawyer, I got to change topic real quick. I don't know if you saw this this story out of the Dominion lawsuit with Fox. Evidently, they're claiming that Fox is redacting embarrassing material from all of the documents that they're sending to Dominion in the discovery. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, if it's not germane to the case, you can redact it. Like if people are talking about their weekends, you know, I think you can redact it. You know, I spent a lot of time at Fox the last 13 years. Mostly I'm at News Nation now, so check me out there, America. It's show business like any other show business. And even though these people are saying disgusting things on TV every night, they're for the most part entertainers, and entertainers tend to behave a certain way in their email. And I think that's probably what they're trying to cover up. But if it's germane to the case, they have no right to do that.
There you go. All right. Chris, I appreciate the time. As always, hopefully folks will check out the podcast, the Aggressive Progressive Podcast. You can also go to his website, ChristopherHahn.com. Chris, appreciate the time, man.
Anytime, Rick.
Good stuff as always. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1941. That was the day that the generators began to operate at one of the most massive construction projects ever built, the Grand Coulee Dam. The dam generates hydropower from the Columbia River in Washington State. The completed structure is the largest concrete dam in the world. It's 550 feet tall at its highest point, and only 57 feet shy of being a mile wide. The dam is a massive 450 feet thick at its base, tapering to 30 feet at the top. It contains nearly three times the concrete of the famed Hoover Dam. 8,000 people attended the opening ceremony. They were led in a parade by the Grand Coulee High School Marching Band. But not everyone celebrated the dam. The project submerged fishing sites and burial grounds sacred to Native Americans. One area it submerged was Kettle Falls, a place where Native Americans are thought to have fished for 7,000 years. The project also took its toll on its workers. 77 men died while building the dam. One was Gerald Cobble, a 32-year-old worker who was struck and killed by a heavy steel bucket. During the tough times of the Great Depression, men had flocked to Washington in hopes of landing a job. Thousands found work on the project. The workers labored by shifts around the clock to construct the massive foundation. The Coulee Dam became known as the biggest thing on earth and inspired this song by Woody Guthrie.
Well, the world has seven wonders.
It's like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Towers, I guess you know them well. But Now the greatest wonder is in Uncle Sam's fair land. It's that King Columbia River and the big Grand Coulee Dam.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So, Florida. I can't help but laugh whenever I say the word Florida, because they've really, I mean, their legislature off the deep end. As of right now, there's a Senate panel voted, the Judiciary Committee in the Senate voted 8-3 to advance Senate Bill 1438. And you go, what's 1438, Rick? Well, I'm glad you asked. This is important stuff. The most important moment in history. And right now, this is the issue in Florida. Florida cannot move forward unless we deal with drag shows. Because this is important stuff. There's a bill. and this panel said, yep, let's move forward on the ability for the state's Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco. They are a division of the Department of Business and Professional Regulations. To give the Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco the authority to pull licensing or revoke your license or for lodging or food services or anything if you dare to have a drag show and there's a children anywhere near, any child near. You, one parent bring their kid in, you're done. Shut it down. Because drag shows are the end of humanity, of course. First violation could be a $5,000 fine, $10,000 fines for anyone after that. Do you find it interesting going after the drag show? A Senate staff analysis of the bill said that in broad general terms, an adult live performance is a presentation that depicts or simulates nudity, doesn't have to be nudity, sexual conduct or specific sexual activities. I don't actually know what all that means, but if you're dressed up like a woman and you're a man, that's a drag show. So we're pulling something. She got it. Now, let's go to New York. Evidently, in New York on Sunday, there was a drag show going on. And nobody, government-wise, cared. But the Proud Boys, they cared. They cared a lot. They showed up and had a fit and got beat up. This is one of those things, and I love having conversations with people, and this is not new. Understand that gay men are still men and can still beat you up. Looking at the videos of these Proud Boys, these tough guys going, getting beat up by somebody in drag is hysterical. I mean, I sequin dress with the stiletto heels and the little clutch. Just brilliance. How do you go back to your Proud Boy buddies and go, yeah, I got beat up by a drag queen? How do you do that? Do you lose your Proud Boy card after this? Is this the end of the Proud Boy? Are you now do you have to, if you lose, do you become a Pride Boy? I mean, is this where this goes now? I got beat up. Because you're never going to live this down. Your buddies are never going to live this down. And this is one of those things that, as a younger me, always said, leave people alone. Don't pick on, name the category. Because they may turn around and whip your behind. And I'm glad that someone did. And because you look at these Proud Boys, these bully groups, who have to have their guns because they're cowards and can't stand toe-to-toe with you. It's interesting how they went to this, and they're gonna protest and got their hats handed to them. And I think that maybe this is what has to happen. Maybe that's what has to happen. Because I look at this and they go, being nice to people, like this, you know, at some point doesn't seem to work. I don't know. I'm just interested to see how this is playing out. Would you go to a drag show? I went to one a number of years ago, and I have a picture, a very drunken picture of me. And right before the guy took the picture, or the drag queen took the picture, another drag queen grabbed my behind. And I...
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.